everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself. Well, this is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. I'm host Sheldon Brown with producer Declan Curran, and we're all being asked this Friday to gumboot up. Friday is the big gumboot fundraiser, Mike King's initiative to raise, I think, almost $2 million he's hoping for free counselling for young people. The whole point of the gumboot is that depression is like walking through mud every day. So members of the public are encouraged to wear gumboots all day to show their support for young New Zealanders struggling with their mental health. And we've got a young New Zealander in the studio today who's going to be wearing her gumboots, and I'll be asking her about that very soon. Now, Take It From Us is brought to you by Framework, and of course Framework has its big touch tournament tomorrow, starting at Cox's Bay at 10 o'clock kickoff. So we're looking forward to seeing 200 or 300 people at Cox's Bay tomorrow. If you've only just heard about it, then just rock on along, and Cox's Bay in Westmere. So our guest on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us today, is an ambassador for open and honest conversations about mental health, and especially her own mental health. It's fair to say that guest Laura Eustace has been through the ringer mentally despite her young age. Yet she's got the courage to speak out about her challenges, has worked for the Black Dog Institute in Australia as a corporate presenter, and is adamant that being authentic and keeping it real is the only way to address the silence that often immerses mental health. Laura writes a regular blog about her emotions and challenges, yet is quick to say that she doesn't use social media as a way to vent her feelings. So here's Laura on Take It From Us. Welcome, Laura, to you. You're very brave to come into the studio for the first time.
Oh, thank you, Sheldon. Well, thank you for that introduction. And yeah, this is really exciting, very new for me. But I'm really excited to be here, so thank you.
Right, and you're excited to put your gumboots on Friday.
Heck yeah, for sure. Can't wait.
Is that right?
Yeah. I support Mike King, and I've seen him present a couple of times at some conferences, and the way he speaks and gets his message across, I think, especially with his I Am Hope campaign over Facebook as well, getting everyone to change their profile photos and whatnot. I think he's doing really great things within mental health around New Zealand. So, yeah, got to get behind it.
Great. So what are your gumboots going to look like? Are they going to be painted? Or
I don't know. I have to go to the warehouse. I don't actually have any at the moment, but I'll get some for sure.
Right. Got a few ideas once you've purchased them from the warehouse?
I mean, we'll see. Maybe just get some bright pink sparkly ones. You can't go wrong there. Who knows?
You could put a message on it. I'm a mental health blogger.
Yeah, could do for sure.
Yeah. Oh, good on you for supporting that. That's absolutely great. I met Laura in a cafe in Manukau Road about a fortnight ago and was immediately impressed with her candor and honesty. Are they two values important to you, Laura?
Definitely, yeah. It's taken a wee while to get here, but being open and talking about what's going on, especially when it comes to mental health, it's become somewhat imperative for me and for my well-being. So being open and being able to share my experiences I've found has helped me so much. So they're really important values to me now, yes.
So some of those experiences that have impacted your mental health, how much do you want to talk about those?
As I say, I'm very open with what I've gone through. What you heard in Manukau, I'm more than happy to talk about now. So when I was younger, I was diagnosed with depression when I was 16. I was raped when I was 17 and attempted to take my life twice. following that. And since then, it's been a constant roller coaster of emotions, I guess you could say. Getting better and then finding ways to help that. And then, you know, another thing in life happens. Unfortunately, one of my best friends passed away coming up to 2 years ago. It happened very suddenly. We're still unsure of the cause of death, so that's always been something that's been really hard to deal with. And following her death, I found it really, really hard. I was one of the first responders on the scene, so that has kicked off my PTSD that I've been dealing with since then. And again, since then, I've attempted to take my life 3 times, and I'm still here to tell the tale. And I am on the best upwards I've ever been on, and I'm really proud to say I'm still here after everything I've kind of gone through. And I'm just here to talk about my experiences and help people that may be struggling through the same things that I've gone through or can relate on some sort of level. So, yeah.
What would you rate as being the most serious sort of trauma that has impacted your mental health?
I think they've all impacted me in different ways. Obviously, the sexual assault, that was the main thing where I didn't talk about it for a very long time. I couldn't admit it to friends, family, not even myself, for at least a year and a half, where I feel like with the other traumas I went through, I was a lot more willing to talk about it. But for that one, that was one of the first traumas I really went through, and it was definitely the hardest to open up about. And it was only until one of my dear friends, she actually went through a similar experience, and she opened up to me about it, and that gave me the confidence to talk about it as well. So showing that someone else can talk about it, and it led me to opening up about it, that's what kind of kickstarted me wanting to share my stories. And as life went on and as different experiences came up, different traumas as well, I've just really wanted to talk about it because no one talks about it. Yeah. And I found that was the thing that really impacted me the most, was I was struggling with all these emotions and not talking about it, and it just built up and built up. And I think that's what led to my first initial suicide attempts, because it all pent it up and I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't deal with what was going on in my head, and I just couldn't find a way to express it in a safe or open manner.
So were the people, supporters, family, good friends that you've learnt you can talk to and trust?
Yes. I am really, really lucky where I now have a really great support system. It's taken quite a while to navigate the different ways. I definitely opened up to my friends a lot first, which I know was quite a struggle for my family, not understanding what was kind of going on, but I opened up to my friends first, and I slowly got to the point where I was feeling able to talk to my family about it. I think when you open up to your family about it, it kind of made me feel like it was a lot more real. And I think also they weren't too sure about the extent of things, again, because I hadn't talked about it. And it's really opened up the lines of communication now. And so whenever something is going on, I feel like I can talk to them. Like after my best friend passed away, I spoke to my dad a lot. He had gone through a similar experience where his best friend passed away suddenly, and I felt I could relate to it, and all the things he was saying, it was kind of like, yes, I finally have found someone that actually understands what I'm going through. And I think that was a really good connector for me and my dad in particular. And my mum was constantly there throughout all my attempts and all the help that I needed. She was constantly pushing for support, and same with my sister. So I'm so lucky to have such a great support system.
Can I just jump in quickly? I was just going to say, I think a lot of it too is the fear of how your friends and family are going to react, that the risk of them perhaps pushing you aside. And once you've got that trust and that sort of thing, that's a huge thing, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I've had some friends who did turn away when I told them about a second sexual assault I went through. They denied it, and they're not my friends anymore. For that reason, just because they were unwilling to kind of understand where I was coming from, and they were making such comments that were, again, detrimental to my own mental health. And it was kind of, you know, when you start to realise that there are toxic tendencies in other people that are surrounding you and you're trying to get better, if they're constantly pulling you down, you need to be like, okay, well, if you're not helping my mental health right now, or have at all, why are you my friend? What am I getting from this friendship if you're constantly making me upset, if you're constantly adding to this, I wouldn't say mental burden, but like the mental breakdown that's kind of going on in my head.
Yeah.
Why should I put up with that? And it's clearly not a good friendship if you're feeling like you can put me down. So
yeah, it's like a guilt thing, isn't it? Having to justify why you feel how you feel when really you just need them to stop and listen and be supportive.
Yeah.
So how did you explain to those friends that perhaps you weren't going to be friends with them, or did you just walk away from them?
No, I am one of those people where I think I do need to kind of explain my feelings. Otherwise, I kind of, as a way of closure, I guess. Obviously, losing friends is a very hard thing to do, but I explained, look, I don't think this friendship is beneficial for either of us. I'm finding it quite toxic and it's really detrimental to my own mental health. And for me to be able to move forward in life and, you know, get better, unfortunately, this friendship has to come to an end. And I mean,
so did they keep that decision reasonably private, or was there any evidence that they went off and sort of scuttlebutted around the place? And
no. From what I know, it just went its own ways. I mean, people asked a few questions, but as soon as you kind of explained what was going on, then no one really talked about it. I guess it's just kind of like when you're going through high school and whatnot, everyone's kind of changing up friendship groups all the time. I mean, you're going through puberty, you're dealing with all these issues about growing up and whatnot, and everyone's changing how they want to be and how they want to perceive themselves. And so I guess people change friends and they go through different friend groups and you're trying to find the type of people that you click with. So, I mean, it wasn't too much of a big shock, but, I mean, obviously when you're super close to someone, there are going to be a few questions, I guess.
And it's hard to lose friends, isn't it? You know, we don't, many of us don't have such a big group of friends that we can be casual about dropping a few.
No, and it definitely wasn't an easy decision, but I think as well you've got to do things that are going to help your own mental health. I mean, losing friends really does suck, but at the same time I'm lucky that I've got other good friends that are going to support me, and I think that's the most important thing for me.
There's a little saying that I have: when you look at it, a friendship really is a relationship without the intimacy. And I always say, if somebody comes into your life and they're not gonna enhance it and you're not happier as a result, then you really seriously have to stop and say, what the heck is this person here for anyway? Particularly if they're bringing you down all the time, you're trying to go up and it's like someone pulling the rug out from under you all the time.
Yeah,
you can only deal with that, I think, so long, can't you?
Well, in our wellness workshop that we're currently running, the RAP class, it's, we are emphasising, or I'm emphasising as a facilitator, to be around positive people and people that you enjoy. And I guess that's really important. But then there's always that proviso that it's nice to support people with a mental health issue and they aren't always positive. So it's a bit of a catch-22 in some ways.
Oh, for sure. But I think also being able to acknowledge when maybe you're being a toxic person as well. If you've got your own toxic tendencies, I mean, I went through a phase where I know I probably wasn't the best friend to quite a few of my friends, but a lot of them knew that I was going through a really rough time and they stuck by it. And I think those are the friends that you really want to cling on to. But also being able to acknowledge, yeah, okay, I'm being a really crap friend. What can I do to do better now?
Isn't that a big test, though, of friendship is when you go through that mental health diagnosis or anything major in your life, the true friends are there for you, not just for the woo-woo party times, but they're the ones that you know are true friends because they're there for you through thick and thin.
Yeah, for sure.
We do have an obligation, though, I think, Laura, to try and move forward out of our black hole, our black dog. People like to see that we are putting some effort in. We're being personally responsible for our recovery, or at least trying to take baby steps. Is that something, is that the way that you have worked towards recovery, by taking baby steps?
Yeah, I mean, recovery doesn't happen overnight. And I think I've always been quite an impatient person. I like to get things done. But my recovery journey, I mean, it's been over 6 or 7 years now that I've had my depression. And I can tell you it's a long road. It's a marathon. And, you know, by taking those small steps and figuring out ways that work for you, I mean, it's not like a one-size-fits-all kind of recovery plan. You really do have to find the things that really work for you. And emphasize on those and make sure that you are doing them to your best ability. And, you know, when you're going through a crap day, what works for you? What can you do to kind of help yourself get through that day? Even if it's just surviving that one day, right. What can I do to just really get through it? Okay, if I need to sit down and watch YouTube videos that are going to make me laugh, okay, cool. If I need to go and take my dog for a walk outside, just to get outside, awesome. If I need to just go have a shower, change my bed sheets.
Take the pressure down.
Yeah.
Take the pressure down. Mm. Is that our next song, is it?
No.
But you could play that.
If I wanted to.
Oh, well, I might. Oh, can I put a request in as the host of Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us?
No, you've already had your one for this year.
Oh, I've had my one for this year. Well, we'll take a music break anyway. So,
I can squeeze
what have you got
in
for us, Declan?
Well, I was just going to say, firstly, that when you get something traumatic and large in your life, remember I talked about some time back about being in your happy space or happy place? And people say, like a friend that's gone through a lot of health issues says, I don't feel normal anymore. And I said, well, what is normal anyway? How do you measure that? Maybe it's just that you need to look at where you are, and once you find that comfortable place where you're as close as possible to where you were, that's your new normal, that's your new happy place. And so it's just really shifting those expectations, I think. Anyway, enough of my
babble. Thank you for that, Dr. Phil.
Yes, okay. Well, we've got a track here, which is by Lewis Capaldi, if I've said it right, and it's called Someone You Loved. And, of course, you're listening to Take From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on Planet FM 104.6.
I'm going on during this time, I fear there's no one to save me. This all or nothing really got away, you're driving me crazy. I need somebody to hear, somebody to know, somebody to have, somebody to hold. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you numbed all the pain. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. I'm going under. This time I fear there's no one to turn to. This all or nothing way of loving, go be sleeping without you. No, I need somebody to know, somebody to hear, somebody to have, just to know how it feels. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the help me escape. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. And I tend to close my eyes when it hurts. Sometimes I fall into your nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love, but now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love. To let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
We're building up to the big Gumboot Friday, gumbooting up, and our guest Laura Eustace is going to head off to the warehouse to buy maybe some silver with what? Silver sprinkle on, highlights?
I mean, pink with silver sprinkles would be nice.
Oh,
yep.
Pink with the silver sprinkles. Well, that's going to be a highlight. And where are you going to display these? You're going to be going to work on Friday so that people can see these gumboots?
Yes, I will be at work. So, I mean, anyone that's listening from work, you'll know where to find me. You'll be able to see me, for
you're
sure.
You're expecting maybe some people might be listening live to us at your work today.
I don't know. Some people know about it, but they're probably hard at work. So
yeah, and I mean, you've got a sister in London, and she was inquiring as to how she could hear the interview as well.
Yes, yes. So she's over there, and I know that it's way too late for her to be tuning in live, right. But hopefully later on, yeah.
Well, anybody who misses it can listen on planetaudio.org.nz/take it from us. It'll be up on the Planet FM website for the next 5 weeks, and we'll be editing a version of the interview and putting it up on Take It From Us's website as well. You've had a bit of exposure to the mental health system, maybe starting, what, in Australia when you lived over there or before that?
No, so over here, when I initially attempted twice, I was in Auckland Hospital and then referred to the Carey Clinic, which is in Green Lane, and I was in the mental health system there for I think about a year. I was seeing a psychiatrist as well as a psychologist, and I was with them for about a year, and then my next exposure, I guess, was to the Australian mental health system, but I wasn't with them for too long because I obviously came back to New Zealand following what I would deem my worst suicide attempt, and Mum just wanted me back home, obviously, so that she could check that I was safe. Mm. And then I was put into the mental health system over here.
And I gather that the result of being put into the mental health system here wasn't staggeringly great.
Unfortunately not. So because my suicide attempt had taken place over in Sydney, I was in a Sydney hospital for about a week in the psychiatric ward, and then I was only discharged because I was coming back to New Zealand. So my mum had guaranteed to them that she'll make sure that, you know, I get the help that I need back over here and whatnot. So I was allowed to be discharged, and I came back over here, and my parents worked tirelessly to get me into the mental health system. I was seen by, I guess, the crisis team about a week in from when I first arrived. They did an assessment and they said that I wasn't an urgent case. So I was then put onto a 6-month wait list to see a psychologist. So that was quite disheartening.
How long did it take to get to see that psychologist? 6 months?
Well, that was when I got the phone call, but my parents decided, because they were so unsure of what to do and because I was quite a wreck, as you can imagine, they were calling up as many psychologist clinics as they could, just trying to get me into anything until I could see someone. And the first clinic that my mum called, I was referred to a psychologist, and ever since then I've been with that same psychologist. So my parents were willing to pay the amount of money that it costs for a private psychologist, which is quite a lot. And then it was only until I started seeing her that I found out that I was eligible for the ACC to cover my psychologist sessions due to my past sexual assaults.
Right.
So, yeah, I was very grateful for the fact that my parents were willing to put in that money, and luckily I've been able to get into the ACC system, and I have been part of it for about a year and a half now.
Were they able to go back and say, okay, you shouldn't have needed to pay this privately and refunded what you'd already paid, or was it just basically from that point onwards that ACC picked it up?
So it was the first session. When I explained what had happened, my psychologist was like, oh, well, why are you paying?
Gotcha.
You are eligible. And I was like, what are you talking about? I had no idea about this.
And so ACC backdated that?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
So how did you feel about being sort of admitted into the mental health system in a sort of rather superficial way, being told that you weren't serious enough to be seen immediately, to get care immediately, and to have to wait 6 months.
It was definitely disappointing. I was feeling a lot of emotions at that time. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of helplessness. I didn't know what else I needed to do to get that help. I wasn't sure what could be deemed more serious than a suicide attempt. But I will admit, I wasn't forgotten about. I got put into a place called Menaki House, which is part of the DHB. And they did have some support workers calling up once a week, and I went in and I saw them once a week. But they weren't psychologists or anything like that. It wasn't like full-on help. It was more just checking to make sure that you're still part of the system and that to get that underway to see the psychologist in about 6 months' time. Yeah.
Right. So Menaki House is a community mental health centre. I think it's based in Panmure. There's a friend of mine who is a client there. It's not residential, you know. It's just community support or peer support on probably a once a week basis, maybe an hour or 2 hours. But you'd had a suicide attempt recently before that, and you would think that surely there would be some wraparound service that would look after your safety.
Yeah, I was very scared, to be honest. It's a funny feeling scared to be in your own body, scared of your own mind, because obviously I'd seen what, you know, leaving it undone could do. And being in a position where, you know, I had done 4 suicide attempts, what am I meant to do? They could see in the past system.
Help.
Yeah, what more could I do? I mean, I've got a past of trauma. They'd heard everything that had gone on. They'd gotten the records from Australia. I mean, what more could I do? Mm-hmm. It was just a very frustrating time, I guess. And I think, you know, having that wait list, it was quite, you know, demoralizing in a way. But at the same time, seeing how many people do go through the mental health system and how packed up it is, it is a struggle. I mean, the community mental health workers, I've got a few friends that actually work in it, they're so overworked, and you know, there just needs to be a change. There needs to be more funding into it, and I know that there's been a lot more talk going into it, and especially recently, you know, with the Mike King stuff, and even with the things that Jazz Thornton have been doing with the suicide prevention and whatnot. It's great to have all this conversation. I guess there just needs to be more action from the government going behind it.
Well, we have that government inquiry, which has gone very quiet, and that makes me a little bit suspicious. But the good thing was that your parents supported paying for you to see a psychologist, and at the first session it was realised that with your past, with the trauma of your past, that the ACC would pick up the tab, and so that is a high degree of support from the system, from ACC.
Rather than
from the mental health system.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful for it, and I don't want to come in here bashing any system, to be honest, because I'm super lucky and I'm so grateful for the psychologists, my psychologists that I see now, and for the help that they've given me, you know, being able to fund those. So I am really grateful for it, for sure.
I'm just wondering whether they actually have the time and resources to actually look at a file that comes in and be able to fully assess what you've been through and what situation you're currently in there, because I'm sort of wondering if the psychosis or the absolute urgency isn't popping up there and then straight away. Maybe they, if they haven't read the file fully, maybe they're not making an assessment because they haven't got either the information or haven't read into it enough because there's too much pressure with the system. It's just food for thought.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's where people are overworked. They probably don't thoroughly read a file. They don't build up a picture of potential clients' traumatic background. But clearly, you've made a lot of progress, Laura.
I have. Obviously, there was a few hiccups along the way. Again, another suicide attempt at the beginning of last year. But ever since then, it's been a slow uphill, and I think especially in the last 6 months it's been a lot faster of an uphill, which is really, really great. I made a lot of changes that I didn't think that I would do. I went sober for 3 months last year. I went traveling by myself for 5 weeks over in Europe. I was finally doing things that I'd always told myself I needed to do, and I had things to look forward to. So I got into a full-time job, got myself into a routine. I wanted to get more back into exercise, and so once I'd saved a bit of money, I got a PT, and so I see him twice a week now.
Personal trainer.
Yes, sorry, personal trainer.
PT, I know what a PT was.
I could do with that. Yeah, it's a, what is it? It's a cruiser, isn't it? A PT cruiser.
A PT cruiser, that's right, yeah. Yeah, well, let's take another music break. Have you sourced that track that we talked about?
I'm going to do a Vanessa Williams and save the best for last.
Ah.
You see, I just want to keep you on your toes.
Now, who's Vanessa Williams?
She sung that song. She's a singer. She sung Save the Best for Last. I did it years ago, remember? Right, okay. At the very end of the year.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's right. This one's by a group called Why Don't We, who I must admit I've never ever heard of before, but it's a song called Cold in LA, which I'm sure it is at this time of the year. And I thought I'd pop it on. It actually, Laura had a chance to look at it and select before we came in. So I'm going to shut up now and get on with the music. And you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio. We broadcast every Tuesday right here at Planet FM 104.6 from 12:30 through to 1:30.
I'm a little bit shy, I'm a little bit right on time, and I know that you don't operate the same. Are you feeling alright? Cause I really can't tell sometimes. I wanna know what's going on inside your brain. Just come a little bit closer, cause I don't know if I know you yet. Yeah, there seems to be something new every day. Why do I really wanna hold you? Why do I want you so bad? Yeah, you're beautiful, but something's in my way. Yeah, we started with a good night, then it turned to day. Never thought that we would ever say the things we say to each other, but we're here just staring face to face. Why don't you just stay with me? Don't walk away, cause it's cold in LA. Every time that you leave me behind, just stay at the place. Cause I can tell by the way you're looking at me, you'll be fine. So why are you talking? Cause you don't know what to say. Do you do this often? Is it all just a game to you? I'm wondering. Never seen this sort of thing. Am I the only one you came to see? Yeah, we started with a good night, then it turned to day. Never thought that we would ever say the things we say to each other, but we're here just staring face to face. Why don't you just stay with me? Don't walk away, cause it's cold in LA. Every time that you leave me behind, just stay at the place. Tell by the way you're looking at me, you'll be fine. You'll be fine either way. But I wish you'd stay. Yeah, we started with a good night, then it turned to day. Never thought that we would ever say the things we say to each other, but we're here just staring face to face. Why don't you just stay with me? Don't walk away.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, our producer here. He's very chatty today and very perky, so that's always good. We are talking to our guest, Laura Eustace, who has just mentioned, I'd say, a huge number of courageous things that she has done to support her mental health. And one of those was a full-time job. Another was a five-week trip to Europe. What else was on that list, Laura?
Getting my exercise sorted out with a personal trainer.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And also getting my little dog, Eugene.
Yes.
He has been the best thing for my mental health, for sure. I never really knew how good dogs could be for your mental health, but they get you out of the house, they get you walking, and also he's just so darn cute to look at. So.
And they listen without judgment.
Right. Mm. Eugene Eustace.
Yes.
It's a bit of a mouthful, Eugene Eustace. Yeah, so having a pet has been very good for your mental health.
Yes, yes. Well, a dog in particular. I mean, right. I've got two cats at home, but they tend to ignore me, so it's nice to actually have a pet that wants to see me.
Yeah, yeah. Cats are a bit, I don't know, what
cats
would you say?
Cats are too much work. I think with a dog, well, actually dogs are even worse because that's what puts me off. Just about need a schedule just to look after them before I even look at my own.
Yeah, well, cats are a bit me. It's all on their terms, I think, isn't it?
Pretty
yeah.
much.
Dogs, seem to be much more out there and dependent on our company and wanting to go out. And so where do you walk, Eugene?
So I've got a dog park at the bottom of my road, which is pretty good, and then I'm pretty close to the beach as well. So when it's nighttime, we take him down to the beach, and he has the best time of his life, really.
Right. And yeah. You meet a lot of other dog owners and other people who admire your dog. And
oh, yes.
So
yes.
You make connection with people as well.
Yeah, no, it's a great time. And even my mum, she works from home, so she's with Eugene quite often during the day. And she loves going down to the dog park at the end of the day because, I mean, when she's by herself at home, it's a good way for her to go out and socialise. So I think she enjoys it more than I do sometimes. Right. So it's really good. Yeah, she gets to go out and talk to a lot of people, and I'm definitely used to all the dog chat that goes on now.
Yeah,
learning all the different types of breeds that are out there. Yeah. I never really realised how many oodles there could be. So
you've got an oodle.
I've got a spoodle.
A spoodle.
But there are lots of oodles out there, which I had no idea about.
I play tennis with a woman who's got an oodle, and yes.
I'm always telling my friend if she doesn't want to take her dog out, just put it on a bungee cord, let it go for a walk, and pew, come back on its own.
So, Laura, you worked in Australia for the Black Dog Institute, which it surprised me, actually, that the Black Dog Institute hasn't been introduced into our mental health sector here in New Zealand. But I did hear, had the privilege of listening to one of the senior speakers from the Black Dog Institute at a conference here. But you were a speaker, a corporate speaker, on behalf of youth, were you, for the Black Dog Institute?
Yes. So I had a two-day training day with them, which also included some speech writing and whatnot. What you do as a corporate speaker is you do a 15-minute presentation, and about 5 minutes of that includes your own personal story. So I hadn't actually worked for them for too long before my best friend passed away, so I wasn't with them for as long as I had hoped, but I'm still in good contact with them, and they've been really supportive with everything that I've been going through. And I'm still in contact with them today, and they say that they would love to hopefully one day come over to New Zealand as well. And if so, then, you know, you'll hear from it.
Yeah, right. How big an organisation are they in Australia?
I couldn't tell you how many people work there, but it is a very big organisation. I mean, they do all of their own research. They provide their own psychologist clinics and whatnot. They cover so many bases, and they're really driving a really good pinnacle in Australian mental health, I think, because, again, they're doing all their own research. They're implementing programs into workplaces. They've got apps that are catering to different needs, so for youth as well as, like, kind of like Headspace as well. They've got a lot of things going on, and I think that's definitely something that we could really utilise over here as well. I mean, they're just doing so great, and, I mean, they've got the funding into it as well, which is amazing, but yeah, they really care about their volunteers, their speakers and whatnot, because it was a volunteer role, and I think they're just doing really great things. So, yeah, it's cool to see from even over here now.
So in New Zealand, we have different apps. We've got depression.org, the Lowdown, these sorts of things. These are some of the sort of technological supports that you've tapped into?
I tapped into Lifeline when I was younger. I have gone through a lot of the websites. I went through depression.org. I went through the Lowdown. And again, I didn't really use too much of it. I think it was more when I was kind of unsure what I was going through. And so I was kind of trying to look for an explanation to all my symptoms and what I was going through and whatnot. But I wouldn't say I fully utilized them as per se. I was just kind of like looking to see, almost trying to self-diagnose myself at the time, because I was just so confused as to what was going on. And I didn't really know too much about depression when I first found out. I mean, I kind of had that, you know, stigmatized thought of like, oh, just someone that's super sad all the time. I didn't really understand what that meant to be. I was always a really happy kid. So for me to be diagnosed with depression, I think it was quite a shock for me, because I was like, oh, so this is what it is. This is what I am now. Am I just this permanent sad person? How do I get out of this? What is this?
So what did you do to try and understand a bit more about depression? Because one of the things in the wellness classes that I'm currently facilitating is that we need to educate ourselves about that diagnosis or about those terrible symptoms that we're feeling and try and get some sort of clarity.
Yeah, again, I think that is where I kind of did a bit of research. I looked into a lot of websites or just kind of anything on the internet that I could kind of grab onto. Depression.org, I mean, offers the different types of, like, you can take a quiz, I think, to see what you're feeling and, you know, what that might result in and whatnot. But I also went to my family doctor, and my family doctor at the time, she was such a lovely lady, and she kind of explained a bit more. She gave me a few leaflets, but again, I didn't really know too much. It was just kind of navigating what was going on and doing my own kind of research at 3 a.m. in the morning when no one else could see me and I was in the darkness of my room.
And you couldn't sleep because of the depression.
Yeah, exactly. And my mind was racing and I was like, I just want to know what's going on, like finding anything I could. And I think that's why I've created my social media platform, Flourish, because there just wasn't anything out there when I was first diagnosed. Right. I didn't know of anyone going through it. I didn't know what it meant to have depression. I didn't know anyone my own age that had depression. I'd spoken to a couple of friends about it, but they either weren't really educated like I was, or they just didn't really understand it. And I think that's why I really got passionate about it, because I really wanted to understand what was going on. And unfortunately, we just weren't taught those kind of things at school. So.
Right. Yeah, you use your blog is called Flourish, and there's been a bit of controversy around the word flourishing, I think, because Changing Minds, who is the sort of the consumer organisation in Auckland, is looking for a communication specialist, and I think that they said here somewhere, I'm trying to... Oh, yes, they're looking for somebody... they asked the question, do you have your own experience of recovery from mental distress or addiction, are flourishing now and want to influence how the world sees well-being? And people have objected to the fact that the Changing Minds is asking for somebody that is flourishing now. And I'm just a little unclear as to why people have got a little bit upset about this requirement to be flourishing now. I mean, Laura, it seems to me you're flourishing now. Do you feel you're flourishing now?
I definitely think I'm flourishing, yes. I hadn't heard about that article, which is interesting, or about the Changing Minds thing, but flourishing to me is, I think, when you think of growth, I think of... Obviously, plants are such a good analogy for that, because, I mean, there are so many different types of plants, and that's the same with growth. There are so many different types of growth out there. And in particular, my logo is two people with no head per se, but they've got different types of flowers coming out of their heads.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I've actually got a tattoo of that as well on my rib cage. of a girl that's got flowers coming out of her head. And I think that for me is to represent, you know, the different types of traumas I've gone through and how beautiful things have continued to grow despite the hardships that they've gone through. And I think that's why I named it the Flourish Project, because of the fact that I do think that no matter how, you know, maybe wilted your flowers may be, if you change the environment, if you change the soil, if you put it more into sunlight, if you take it out of sunlight so much, if you cater to the needs of the flowers, you can.
If you water it.
Yeah, if you water it. I mean, if you just change pots, you know, to allow the roots to go out bigger, the flowers can grow. And I think that's something that your mind can do as well. You know, sometimes you've just got to take yourself out of a certain environment and put yourself into a new one. Sometimes, you know, you've got to find new tools that can help you, you know, water your plants, water your mind, grow.
It's a beautiful analogy, actually. Let's take a music break and we'll...
As soon as you said about watering plants, I know it's my mind. I just straight away thought of a dog.
Okay, Declan, let's play this music.
Enough of that. Yeah, okay. This one here, I thought it was... You remember I said to you before, I thought it was Pressure Down was by Queen. That's Under Pressure. This one's John Farnham, Pressure Down. If I can get my buttons in order, I'll be right. Hang on.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Take the pressure down.
So that track, Declan, was
Pressure Down. I'm not pushing my button today. Pressure Down, that one was, and it's by John Farnham.
Excellent. Well, we're talking today to guest Laura Eustace about, well, she's just started talking about her Flourish project. We probably need to wind this back a little bit for a little bit of background, Laura, about the Flourish project. Is it essentially just a blog or...?
So it started off as a blog. It was my way of coming to terms of how to process all my different traumas. So I used to write about my experiences, and it was also a way for me to explain to my friends and family what I was kind of going through in my head after I'd had time to reflect and kind of accept what had gone on. And now it's turned into a social media platform on Instagram, where I share thoughts on there as well as different tips, quotes, and also other people's stories as well. But ultimately, it's to become a website that includes not only my blog, but also the stories of other people, of people that are flourishing, and their stories of recovery as well, and just sharing their tips as well, because, again, sharing stories is so important to, you know, for other people to be able to relate to it. But it's essentially to start the conversation around the kind of taboo subjects that surround us. So, you know, mental health, suicide, sexual assault, grief, things like that. Yeah.
Well, all of those pretty much you have experience of. It seems to me that this communication specialist required by Changing Minds, you could well qualify for this job.
Potentially. Yeah, who knows? Well, should look into it.
Yeah, I can leave you... I can leave you the detail about it, but let me see here. It actually closes April 5. Oh, well, it says it could be part-time, but the salary looks quite attractive, somewhere between 53 and 60K pro rata. So maybe it has an opportunity to be part-time as well. But anyway, that's the communication specialist at Changing Minds. And this ad has got a little bit of further profile because they are asking for the person who has their own experience of recovery from mental distress or addiction, that this person should be flourishing now and want to influence how the world sees well-being. Well, how do you see well-being, Laura?
I see it as a whole scope of things, to be honest, because I think wellness, again, for everyone is, it's not a one size fit all. I think it's, again, trying to find things that work for yourself. I mean, some people really like to maybe, I don't know, sit inside and watch YouTube videos or Netflix all day, and that's their kind of self-care. Or some people like to go out on hikes or go to the beach or something like that. And I think well-being, again, it is very personalised, and I think things that are able to bring you a form of peace or release and just kind of make you feel a little bit more at ease those anxieties, ease how you're feeling, or a way of, I wouldn't say escape, but I think just being able to just sit still and be at peace with your mind. I think that's a really important thing, for sure.
Is it easy to be at ease, can I say, at your age? I mean, even at my age, I have difficulty being at ease. But I guess there are more pressures for a person your age. You know, you've got your whole future ahead of you, career decisions, relationship decisions, housing challenges, all of those sorts of things. It just seems, from my point of view, enormous for young people these days.
Of course, it's really overwhelming, and I think I didn't even realise that even coming out of high school and even choosing a university to go to and having to choose, okay, what am I going to study, because that's going to be my job for the rest of my life. Oh, my goodness, you know. Yeah, I've definitely felt very overwhelmed at times, and even now sometimes I'm a bit like, what am I doing with my life? What am I going to do next? But I think if you continue to think in such a large aspect, it can get too overwhelming. I think you do have to take things step by step, and again, that's the same with recovery. You've got to kind of take bite-sized pieces so that, you know, you can actually chew it properly and digest it and actually think about what you want to do.
Living in the now?
Yeah, but also thinking maybe instead of long term, just thinking about, okay, what am I going to do this next week? What am I going to plan for the weekend? What can I do that I know is going to help me maybe get through the day? Having a good set like routine during the week, especially if you work full time or part time, just having a routine around that of how you can feel better and work around it.
How important is work being to your mental health?
Work, I think, is important because it gives me the means to be able to support myself in things that I want to do. So last year especially, saving for Europe, that was very important to me. And also because a sense of doing things that I've wanted to do. So I work in recruitment and I really enjoy the aspect of talking to people and, you know, helping them find a job. I mean, that's really an exciting thing to be able to provide someone with a job.
But it provides you with social connection as well.
Yes, yes, exactly. And again, there's always benefits from it. But I also know that there was a time in my life where I hated work. I couldn't go into it because it was causing me too much anxiety. I had panic attacks every morning before I had to go into work and it wasn't a right environment. I think a lot of people do put on quite a front when at work, and I think that's why there's a lot of workplace well-being initiatives at the moment as well coming into place, because I mean it is a place that you spend a lot of your time at. I mean, you spend more time at work during the day than you probably do at home with your family or with your significant other, and you know, to be in a place where you do feel somewhat comfortable and you know you're able to kind of do what you need to do as well as but keep your mind in check during the day, I think that's really important.
So keeping the mind in check, that's still a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, you can be so busy during the day or you can feel overwhelmed again because things are getting too busy or too many people calling up or something like that. But even just taking a break and going outside for 15 minutes for your lunch break or something like that, just doing something where you can actually go and kind of just have a break where you can just be like, okay, I'm outside, I'm not thinking about work right now. Okay, how am I breathing? How am I feeling? Cool. Okay, I'm calm and collected. Let's go and tackle the next task. Right. I think just taking a break, and I mean, we do it for bathroom breaks. If we need to pee, we go pee. Why can't we do that with our mind? You know, if you need a break for your mind, just go do it.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Psychologist, not so recently, but a while ago, said to me, I want you to do 15 minutes of deep breathing before you go to sleep and 15 minutes of deep breathing when you wake up. And I actually add a little saying to that, focus on the now. I say that as I breathe in, and I say relax as I breathe out. And I'm sure that that exercise, invariably it will get me back to sleep. If I wake up, I have to go and pee in the middle of the night because of my age.
I wish I could even breathe deep to start with. Everything's bunged up like Mason.
Well, then you need to do something about that, Declan. But that breathing, I think, is a huge asset in terms of managing, certainly for me, managing any unease, you know, and helping to flourish.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely agree with that.
Well, Laura, thank you very much for a wonderful interview. You've done a great job. I don't know whether we should mention the fact that you're with Mind and Body, and it would have been great to have your peer support specialist here, but she was busy. But thank you very much to Sasha.
Yeah, no, thank you, Sasha. Yeah. I'm very, very grateful for this opportunity and even to meet both of you guys and being able to share my story on such a cool platform.
Yes. Well, let's just go back to this job, the communication specialist required by Changing Minds, the consumer organisation based in Mount Eden. They are looking for a communication specialist to manage our strategy over several projects and work streams. You'll be working at an organisational level to continue raising the positive public regard for Changing Minds. So it sounds as though we're out of here, Declan.
We are. Another good show as always. We'll see you all next week.
And thank you again to Laura. Everybody.